This is Night Call, the first and only nationwide listener call-in show on vital issues. Tonight's subject, Spock on the Spock Generation. Tonight's guest, Dr. Benjamin Spock. Night Call is your program. Share your opinions and ideas with the rest of the country. Speak for yourself and ask your questions directly by calling Night Call in New York City from anywhere in North America. Here are Night Call's special phone numbers. From the East and Midwest, call collect at area code 212-749-3311. From the West at 212-749-4300. And from the New York area at 866-5010. Now from New York City, Night Call's host, Del Shields.
Good evening. Through the pages of his book, Baby and Child Care, Dr. Benjamin Spock has become the unofficial pediatrician of literally millions of parents and children. His simply written guide has been translated into some 29 languages. And if there's any one man on whom we can blame the modern crop of youth, I guess that it might be Dr. Spock. Dr. Spock's involvement with the draft resistors may be viewed as not such an isolated incident at all. In fact, it fits in very properly with this whole concept of child upbringing and what he believes should be instilled in every child, the feeling that it's the child's privilege as well as his duty to serve humanity and make a better world. Dr. Spock is concerned about children. In fact, he states that, and we quote, children are the most important thing in human existence. So the question becomes, what are we raising them for? Tonight, my guest calling in from New York City is Dr. Benjamin Spock to talk with us about the youth of today, the Dr. Spock generation. And we invite you, the Night Call listener, to call in and share with us your views about the generation that grew out of baby and child care. Dr. Spock, good evening, sir.
Evening.
And thank you for being with us on this somewhat cold night here in New York.
It's all right. I'm cozily at home.
Doctor, let's begin our conversation by asking you tonight, do you feel that this generation of youth is basically that different from other generations?
I don't think basically. I don't think human nature can change that fast, but I think that styles change quite suddenly and over a few years' time, and certainly... Whereas the kids grew to adulthood in the 1950s, when they answered questionnaires, they said all they were interested in was the job that paid the highest and gave the most security on retirement. And now industry is having trouble recruiting enough people, and young people say to recruiters from industry, I'm interested in trying to do something for mankind. So it's a big difference in surface attitude, but I don't think that the kids of the 50s were no good, and the kids of the 60s are entirely different.
When you say that there's a difference in styles, could you elaborate on that for us?
Well, I think that, let's put it another way, that the kids who grew up in the 50s, generally speaking, took on their parents' attitudes. I think it's been an intensely materialistic period since the end of World War II, and they just took their parents' view for it that money and things were the important aspects of life. Then I think by the time we got into the 60s, and we can get back into why they were different, I think that young people suddenly wondered whether there wasn't more to life than cars and television and satellites and things like that. And I think that the spiritual side of life is human nature is always latent in men. Sometimes it goes underground more, and sometimes it's brought to the surface. And I'm just guessing, but I think that after 20 years of straight materialism, in the parental generation, young people, the new crop of young people, suddenly said there must be something more to life than just things and money. I think this goes along with the fact that the young always have a tendency to be critical of the older generation. They're always looking for things attitudes have changed. I don't mean the same people, but the new crop's attitude has changed.
Well, this conflict about money, whereas the youth of today, the emphasis does not seem to be on money. And coming from parents...
Not as much,
all right. And then coming from parents where the emphasis seems to be on the material things, does this seem to be the total or the sum of where the conflict is?
Oh, I don't think so, but I think that this is at the center of it. I think another thing that's near the center is young people's feeling that their parents' generation is very insincere, that they're hypocrites. This is not exactly the same as concern or revulsion against concern for material things. It's they feel older people are dishonest, and I think that older people are somewhat dishonest, always have been. You know, older people have learned, I don't mean very old people, parental generation people have learned to cover things up and say the proper thing and pretend that things are nicer than they are sometime, and I think that the particularly critical mood that young people are in makes them very sharp in their criticism about this hypocrisy.
Dr. Spock, do you feel that the generation that was brought up on your book that gives the child much more choice in what he will or will not do either finds it difficult to fit into society or will be necessarily changed by it?
Well, I think that he makes more of a stink, you might say, when he's in late adolescence, early youth, but I think that, and certainly seems to stand out like a sore thumb from society, but I don't think that that means that they won't fit in later. I think that this crop of young people, though, by the time they are fitting in more, I think that they're still going to try to make a different society. I think that as adolescents and youths become adults with jobs and families and children, the tendency is to become more conservative and more compliant. But I don't think that the impatience and the radicalism of some of these young people is going to disappear quite that easily. You know, I think that when they get jobs and family, that they're still going to be, at least a fair number of them are going to continue to be critical, and I think they're going to want to change the world somewhat. I happen to agree with them. I think that the world is in a desperate state for a number of reasons, and that it's marvelous that there's a crop coming along that is willing to face this and try to do something.
This is Night Call in New York, and tonight our conversation is Spock on the Spock Generation, and our guest calling in from New York City is Dr. Benjamin Spock. And just at this point, we're going to ask some of our Night Call listeners to join us with their conversation as well as their dialogue. And as we always preface our statements each night, to remind you that Night Call is your program. The only way that Night Call can exist is when we have dialogue between our Night Call listeners and our Night Call guest. If you're calling in from New York City, our telephone number is 866-5010. That's 866-5010. If you're calling in from the East or the Midwest, it's area code 212-749-3311. That's area code 212-749-3311. If you're calling in from the West, it's area code 212-749-4300. We'll take our first call tonight from Lindenwood, New York. Mr. Weinstein is hearing Night Call over WLIB-FM. Mr. Weinstein?
Yes?
Good evening.
Oh, good evening.
Your question, sir.
Oh, well, I am just celebrating my 17th birthday now, and I am opposed to the war in Vietnam, and you know...
Well, first, let me offer you happy birthday.
Me too.
Thank you very much. Well, you know, I wanted to ask Mr. Spock, Dr. Spock, excuse me, exactly what he'd advise me to do.
Well, I don't think Dr. Spock can advise you at this particular time, or... Would you care to comment, Doctor?
I'd like to discuss it with him. In the first place, does he mean, let me address him directly, do you mean about the draft, or are you talking about life in general?
Well, I wasn't talking about life in general. I meant specifically about the draft.
That's what I guess I was being protected against. Actually, I've never advised anybody about the draft. I happen to have been indicted and convicted for aiding and abetting resistance to the draft, but we were accused originally of counseling, meaning that we in some way or other tried to persuade, but the jury said there was no evidence that any of us ever tried to persuade anybody. All that we did was say that we offered moral support and financial support for those young men who in good conscience believed that the war was illegal and that they were not able to kill and be killed in an illegal war. And we just said that they were morally right, and we thought. So actually, it's not just that I never did counsel anybody, but I, and I think most responsible adults, don't think it's moral to try to advise anybody on anything that's as crucial as whether you're going to serve or whether you're going to defy the government in one way or another. These are come under the same head as decisions to marry or not to marry, to have children or not to have children. These are the vital questions of life, and we've long learned in medicine and in social work that if you try to advise anybody who's not ready to decide for himself, you only get him into trouble. So both because I might get myself into trouble by advising, and because I don't believe in advising, I'm not going to answer you on that one. However, I welcomed your question because it gave me a chance to make clear what I have done and what I haven't.
But isn't that what your whole book, your book on baby care, doesn't that advise?
Well, that's not about anything crucial. There's nothing in that book about telling people to have a baby or not to have a baby. They got the baby.
But you're telling them how to care for it, isn't that then true?
About what? Worry about what?
You're telling them how to care for the baby.
Oh, well, if a mother says, when he cries, should I pick him up or put him down? Well, I try to explain what are some of the things that make a baby cry and how you tell which thing it is that's making him cry and what's useful. But those are relatively small matters compared to the major decisions of life.
You mean, so actually, like in the draft, you weren't springing ahead and giving advice or any then things like that. You were just... like saying, I'm in your corner,
Actually, here and there around the country in most cities, there are draft counseling services. These are not in the business of telling young men how to disobey the law, but it's giving young men an idea of what legal rights they have. Such questions as how, if you believe that you may be a conscientious objector and are entitled to conscientious objector status, how do you find out whether you're entitled to conscientious objection status. You can discuss that with a draft counselor. There are dozens of very legitimate questions that can be asked for which there are legal answers, but a draft counselor has to know many ins and outs. Actually, I've never been in the business of draft counseling.
Actually, even the draft counselor can't really give you advice. They just, tell you of your rights.
They make information available to you, information of all kinds, that's right. And,
but they don't risk on it, though.
I think that a guy who's just gotten to be 17 would be very smart to go and to a draft counseling center and find out just what the situation is.
I have what I guess would be called a special case. I was going to ask you about this. Just this summer, I was involved in an accident where I had a serious hip injury. Now,
yeah.
I don't know if there'll be any permanent damage from it.
Right. That's the sort of thing that a draft counselor can discuss with you about what kind of medical certification you need, to bring to your draft board and so on.
Mr. Weinstein, thank you so very much and have a happy birthday.
Okay. Thank you very much, sir.
This is Night Call in New York, and tonight our guest is Dr. Benjamin Spock, and our conversation is, of course, Spock on the Spock Generation. We'll return to our guest, Dr. Spock, following station identification. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest Dr. Benjamin Spock after station identification. Night Call welcomes your comments about this nationwide listener call-in program. Your opinions and reactions are of value to the producers of Night Call in their continuing attempt to initiate and stimulate dialogue between the black man in the street and his white counterpart. Please address your comments to Night Call, Pomona, New York, zip 10970. That's Night Call, Pomona, New York, zip 10970. The producers of Night Call attempt to balance the points of view presented on this series about controversial issues. In keeping with this traditional concern for free expression on controversial matters, Night Call invites requests for equal time from responsible representatives on opposing points of view if it's thought they have not been adequately represented on the air. Such requests should be addressed to Night Call, Pomona, New York, zip 10970. That's Night Call, Pomona, New York, zip 10970. Ask your own questions direct. Speak for yourself, collect from anywhere in North America to guest Dr. Benjamin Spock about the younger generation. Call Night Call Collect from the East and Midwest on area code 212-749-3311. From the West on area code 212-749-4300. And from the New York area on 866-5010. Again, Del Shields.
This time we'll go out to Portland, Oregon. Miss Muir is hearing Night Call over KLIQ. Miss Muir?
Hello, Dr. Benjamin Spock?
Yes?
We admire you more than any other man on the scene today.
Well, this is a marvelous greeting. Thank you.
We feel you're the man for all seasons. And the people are 100% with you all the way.
Well, I think some are, and I welcome that, and that makes it easier to take the strong disapproval of other people who think I'm a scoundrel.
They are just a very subversive, very deluded few.
Well, it's more than a few, but
it's tragic that we have to have this type of a thing on the world scene today. It's so tragic.
I agree.
We do admire you.
I agree. We're in a mess, and we need people who
awakening
use their own heads and stand up and say what they think needs to be done and then help to do it.
I should say insist on doing it. Now, I read an article by your son in the journal a short time ago, and he indicated that you are not necessarily a regular church member.
That's right. I don't think of myself as irreligious, though, but I've never belonged actually to a church, been a regular church goer.
That's what he
but
said.
I want to be sure that nobody thinks that that means that I'm anti-religious I'm lacking in spiritual aspirations.
No, your son indicated you had a true spirituality, not the perverted aspect that is now being taught through the churches, that you are a child of Caesar rather than a child of God. And Joel Goldsmith, in his book, A Spiritual Breakthrough or The Thunder of Silence, indicates that if we, the people, have even one touch of God, we will not and we cannot kill, we cannot steal or lie, we will love, and we'll have love for all humanity, and that will put away with this false concept of war and of government through war, stealing, death, and destruction. Why don't we stress that particular point?
Yeah. Well, I certainly agree with you there, but I think there are an awful lot of people who
deluded.
Feel that there is no conflict between religion and war.
Through this false concept of Christianity, of course, the good book says this will be done, that we will be taught to kill in the name of truth and in the name of love, of course, the perverted word, and it is so tragic. Now, Ferdinand Lundberg, in his book, and he also was a guest on Night Call a few weeks ago, says that his book, The Rich and the Super Rich, stated that the wealth of the lands and the tax-free foundations dictate these government policies of forced death and destruction for private conquest. And in the Oregonian this morning, we have the headlines. The banks in Switzerland, the 10 top banking institutions, agree to prevent the devaluation of money. Now, what does that firm indicates that is where our totalitarian government is coming from. And I'll quote the good book. It says that when the people know this truth, that we are being manipulated by the wealth of a few perverted reprobate minds, the people will not respond to this flag waving and go out and kill each other in cold blood. But of course, always plied with drugs and these so-called alcoholic beverages that are now the way of life with these militarists. Now, aren't you in agreement with that, Dr. Spock?
Yeah, I, generally speaking, I'm in agreement with all your peace sentiments. Of course, I wouldn't link it so closely to drugs and alcohol as I think you are, because I think that...
Well, it's indicated that a man cannot kill the way that our young men are obliged to do in cold blood.
Well, they can do it after they've been convinced that this is the that they owe it to their country and that their country is on the right side and God's on their country's side. I think that this is one of the perversions of religion that certainly has been true of the wars that I remember, beginning World War I, World War II, Korean War. The government claims that God's on their side, and the ministers of the country, 4 out of 5 of them, agree that God is on our side. And of course, the ministers on the other side are telling the people there that God are on their side. So I think this is an abuse of religion.
Why have the ministers sold out to the devil?
Yeah. Well, I'm sure they're conscientious.
They are not conscientious. They cannot be. And yet they go under this false guise of being ministers of the word of love.
Well, I'd argue with you a little there, because I think that one of the troubles with man is that he so easily convinces himself that he's right. This is why man gets into all kinds of trouble and goes on being bad, I think, because he has a great capacity for persuading himself that he's right and it's the other person who's wrong. And my own feeling is that we aren't going to get a safer, saner, more loving world until people begin to question themselves. And I'd say this is, I don't think that the minister who thinks that his country is always right in a war is a bad person. He's just like the average citizen and the warrior. He's just convinced himself that right is on his side, just as the ministers on the other side have convinced themselves.
But now you are not a product of this perverted sense of Christianity. And you do subscribe to integrity. And these men, if they really read this book, it says these wars are going to be carried on with this premise that it is being done for God and to enable us to spread the gospel of truth and the gospel of joy. And they know that what they are imposing on people is nothing but a huge, big perversion of the word of truth.
I don't think that they know that, though.
I think they have to know it if they are truly ministers of God.
You may know it, but...
you are not perverted. Why? You have not been over...
Miss Mayor, I think, though, that in your particular premise, that you are failing to take into consideration that there are many ministers and there are many kinds of beliefs. And also, I think we have to inject the question that there are those who will interpret all laws literally. I think one of the great conflicts about the draft and the youth resistance to draft is that there are still some people who feel that they must obey the law as it is. And I don't think we've ever been able really to resolve this particular conflict.
But if they go along with the premises indicated in their
well, gospel, does that make them perverts?
It says that the word cannot be taken literally; it has to be spiritually discerned. It says that they are an entity of the spiritual, the good, and not the perverted sense of the satanic mind. And that is exactly what they are teaching, and we cannot excuse them. Now, for the author, Joel Goldsmith, in his book so plainly, explicitly indicates that where we are remiss, we seem to say there is just one realm, and that God is in operation in wars and in Vietnam. Joel Goldsmith says God is not. That is Satan's realm. That is the realm of this world concept, the perverted word of truth. And I believe that God cannot and does not function in a war concept, because it's nothing but lies, death and destruction, thievery and conquest. And the satanic mind is in operation there. And if we distinguish between these two, we will have this touch of God that will be able to enable us to implement the word of truth and dissolve this false concept of law.
Well, I think your premise is very interesting, but I think you're also assuming that all of us, or that there's some of us who actually know what God is or what God is doing or what God's premise is, and I don't think there are any of us who actually know the total truth about it, and we all are searching.
We know to this extent that Oral Roberts says God is good, and anything to the contrary is evil. And you choose your realm. Are you a child of Satan and evil, or you are a child of good? When killing,
they're a child of good, though they're violently disagreeing with somebody.
Well,
Miss Mayor, we want to thank you.
Of joy, and if it's to the contrary, why then it is not the gospel of love that was illustrated. Somebody tonight in our program asked, "Well, why was Jesus Christ selected to be put on the cross?" Mainly because he preached the same doctrine you are, nonviolence.
Well, I don't think we want to see Dr. Spock placed on the cross, Miss Mia. But I said I don't think we want to see Dr. Spock placed on the cross. But we thank you very
much. Say not, but I would much rather than send their boys over there or any place.
All right, thank you very much for calling, ma'am. Thank you. We'll go out to Indianapolis, Indiana. Mr. Hocker is hearing Night Call over WFBM. Mr. Hocker?
Hocker.
We'll get it straight one night, sir. Hocker, right?
Yes, sir.
Thank you, sir. Your question.
Got the line?
You have it, sir. Dr. Spock is on the line.
Mr. Spock, good evening.
Good evening.
I have a couple of items here I would like to mention.
I'm ready.
Say, can't you see? Not like the old say, can't you see of the Star Spangled Banner, but today in this country, people have created a little headline that really hits the heart of my countrymen in America. It goes, "What a country." I heard that phrase in South America about 2 months ago, and I took it to heart when I heard of it. And the phrase really is hitting the people of what's happening in this country. Because the people in this country are all shattered over things, what's going on. Now, we do know that there's a lot of things going on in our colleges. I'm afraid that in a matter of a few more months, the government's going to take over these state colleges. They're going to have to do something. The states can't run them. They still continue to do things. And Johnson walked out when he found out he couldn't do nothing about it, according to the True magazine today. In this country, lots of things has happened.
Well, what is happening, sir?
Well, everything in a way of tax revolts. We have too much tax termites. They're eating the people's heart out. I call them tax termites. It's like an old song that was written one time. A termite was sitting in a rocking chair, and he looked around at the plastic wall, and he said, I won't live long now, because he couldn't have no wood to chew on. And the people today are taking those phrases in mind. That over taxation and what Secretary of Treasury said, tax revolt. Now, there's so much on this here draft burning cards and all that. I'm not mentioning anything about what you've done. But this country needs a tax march on Washington and every state capital in the country. Our state legislatures and congressmen and senators have forgotten their people.
Mr. Acker, one of these nights we're going to have somebody on the show who is involved with taxation, and we're going to have a pretty interesting show, so I'm going to ask you to hold your comments back until that night, okay?
All right.
Thank you very much for calling, sir.
I'd like to get on your program some night in New York. I'll be there in 2 weeks.
All right, sir. Thank you very much, sir.
Bye.
This time out to Seattle, Washington, Mr. Brigg is hearing Night Call over KUOW. Mr. Brigg?
Yes, sir.
Good evening, sir.
I would like to address a question to the doctor.
Okay.
This concerns the factor of technological change, Dr. Spock. It seems to me, I may explain my own position. I am the editor of one of Technocracy's official publications, the Northwest Technocrat, out here in Seattle.
Yes.
We have found that the young people, generally speaking, it seems to be their attitude that they are rebelling against technological change. How do you account for this?
Well, I haven't heard this particular focus on their revolt. It's the ones that I talk to, and of course they know what I'm concerned with. It's the ones that I talk to are rebelling against the war in Vietnam because they think it's a totally illegal and immoral war, as I do, and they're rebelling against racial injustice. And I feel the same way about it. It's a disgrace for a country that's as well educated and meant to be guided by moral and religious principles to be treating black people so abominably still. And they think that poverty is unnecessary and poor education and poor health are unnecessary. These are the things that young people talk to me about, but I think, of course, it's partly that they know that these are the things that I'm concerned with, too. In other words, I haven't heard them complaining about technological advances. I think that I would recognize, as many people do, that we get into a lot of our trouble with technological advances. Certainly the atom bomb was one technological advance I wish we hadn't made because it's a terrible insecurity anywhere, but I must say I have been impressed with the complaint of youth against it.
Well, the attitude that we get, that is, speaking from the framework of a member of technocracy, we recognize technology as something that can be used either for good or evil, or
right.
It depends on the application.
Right.
If you want to use a moralistic approach to the thing. And, of course, we recognize, too, that there is an undesigned and uncontrolled application of technology that is destroying the ecology of man.
Yeah, right.
Mr. Brigg, I'm going to ask you to hold your point for a moment, so we're going to break for station identification.
Yeah.
If you'd like to hold on the line, you can stay there. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest Dr. Benjamin Spock after station identification. Next week on Night Call, Del Shields with his guests, the national president of Synanon, a unique society of ex-dope addicts, ex-criminals, and ex-prostitutes. The editor of the Saturday Review on the international implications of Biafra. A journalist who discusses the future of the printed media. A scientist who advocates social action and the medical director of Planned Parenthood. Monday, Del Shields with his guest, Jack Hurst, the president of Synanon. Tuesday, the editor of the Saturday Review, Norman Cousins. Wednesday, the future of the printed media, with the editor of This Week magazine, William Westendick. Thursday, Martin Pearl, a scientist for social action. And Friday, Dr. George Langmuir, medical director of Planned Parenthood on world population. All this next week on Night Call. Ask your own questions direct. Speak for yourself, collect from anywhere in North America to guest Dr. Benjamin Spock about the younger generation. Call Night Call Collect from the East and Midwest on area code 212-749-3311. From the West on area code 212-749-4300. And from the New York area on 866-5010. Again, Del Shields.
And just before the station break, Mr. Brigg calling in from Seattle, Washington, is on the line.
Yeah.
Mr. Brigg, your statement in reference to youth rebelling against technology, is it only youth that's rebelling against technology? Aren't adults also rebelling against it?
There seems to be an attitude. I take, for example, an article in the New York Times, January 18th. Which made reference to the problems that are growing out of the age of technology, and including environmental pollution and other things, problems of communication and so on. And here is the so-called technocrats taking over and operating independently of the political aspect of our existence. And the reference by Dr. Mesthany, who heads up the Harvard study group on the impact of science and technology on society, made certain charges Namely, that number one, the technocrats, so-called, are taking over. And if it continues, a technocratic elite is going to assume the full control, and we will wind up with what he describes as a technocracy. And on the other hand, there's another school of thought that takes the position that we have to have full participation, which he says will wind up in chaos. And he says we're looking for a third way. Well, now in the attitude of people in all age groups, I would say, is to hold science suspect, which science does not deserve. Science comes to us clean. Science has done nothing in itself to injure humanity. We have seen the politician, the militarist, the businessman, more aptly described as a chiseler, taking the developments of science and misapplying them to anti-human ends. And this is what I object to from the standpoint of being a technocrat.
All right, Mr. Big, let's ask Dr. Spock to comment on this, because we've got a number of other people standing by. Yes. Dr. Spock, would you like to comment?
Well, I certainly agree that technological knowledge has been abused all up and down the place. We're polluting our environments in such a way that we're going to make the Earth uninhabitable, and certainly the piling up of nuclear arms is in great danger of destroying us. So I agree it's what man does with technological advance that's bad. On the other hand, I think that I wouldn't put it all on the technocrats. I think that man, one of the basic troubles as I see it, is that man, modern man, having lost in many cases his belief in religion and his belief in his own spirituality, has turned around and worshipped things and worshipped technology. And I think this is particularly true of Americans, that they really, that a lot of them don't worship God or worship spiritual values or even respect themselves as men, that they're mostly, they mostly worship things.
Well,
and so I don't think it's just the technocrats. I think that it partly has to do with the discovery of evolution and back 100 years ago, and man's losing the sense that he's very close to God, and instead he's taken the very erroneous view, I think, that he's just an animal, so he doesn't respect himself anymore. He's just respects and loves things.
Well, Dr.
Mr. Big,
I would like to say one thing. The statistical abstract of the United States government shows that since 1940, this economy has spent more than $1 trillion on war and preparation for war.
Yeah. Shocking.
Rather than to try to pin this problem on people, it seems to me that we've got to focus it on a system that doesn't any longer square with the requirements of operating a very complicated society.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more.
We are capitalizing calamity to preserve a system of advantage for a relatively few people. And as long as this continues, how can we expect anything other than what we're getting?
Mr. Big, I want to thank you very much for your comments.
Well, thank you, sir.
Thank you so much for calling, sir. Bye. Thank you. To Schenectady, New York, Mr. Bagnato is hearing Night Call over WGY. Mr. Bagnato?
Good evening, Del. How are you?
Good evening. How are you feeling?
Good evening, Dr. Spock. I'd like to ask the doctor a couple questions here. First of all, in regards to his first conversation with the young fellow there, he mentioned something about conscience, about the draft, some of the people opposing it, whether they're in good conscience or not. If he could, I'd like him to answer. How do you determine if certain individuals are in good conscience about opposing the draft?
Well, let me take an easy example first. Quite a number of the young men who are in jail for resisting the draft now are people who were not subject to the draft the time they were college people who had educational deferment, and they felt so strongly about this war being wrong from every point of view that they gave up their educational deferment, wrote to their draft boards saying that they were, if their time came and they were asked, they were going to refuse to serve because they thought the war was totally illegal and immoral. The draft board, many of these cases, reclassified them 1A. I know people myself who've been reclassified because they wrote saying that they were never going to serve. Then they got drafted, then they refused to serve and were sent to prison. Well, those people, to my view, out of principle, opposed themselves to the government when all they had to do was keep quiet, and they might well never have been drafted. This is what I mean by principle, and it's one of the reasons why I dislike the word evade the draft. I've been accused of encouraging young men to evade. Well, I never encouraged, and the men that I'm talking about did not evade. When you say to your government or your draft board, I'm not going to fight because the war is wrong, there's no evasion here. You're walking straight into trouble, and you're likely to be sent to jail right away.
Yeah, but Doctor, the draft has been in effect how long now?
Long time.
Who are these young people, or old people, or middle age, any class of people to determine who goes to war and who doesn't go to war? Nobody likes war. Fortunately, I had done my term 4.5 years, and I wasn't in combat. There was no war at the time, but in the event there was, I would have went, no questions asked. But
I think most young people are quite willing to go. They're not pleased, but they're quite willing to go.
True.
If they believe that the war is in their country's interest. And I served in World War II, and I believed in the war that the United States, in the war in which the United States, with the UN, supported South Korea against North Korea, because I thought in all those cases the aggression came from the other side and would have been delighted to serve. But I and these young men who oppose this war say there's no aggression against the United States. The United States made a power grab, tried to install its puppet in order to control Southeast Asia. We were never invited in there. And then when the people didn't like our puppet, whose name was Diem, and began to revolt against him, that was in 1960, for the last 9 years, we've been destroying their country and killing them. We've killed 1 million of them, as well as 30,000 Americans. But their only crime is that they refuse to take the puppet that we selected for them. This is an entirely different war. There was no aggression against the United States. The Vietnamese people had nothing against the United States. It's the United States power grab that went wrong because the puppet that we selected for them, they couldn't stand. That's my view.
This is true. I agree with you there, but you still have a lot of these young fellows that aren't taking the same attitude when you say that there was no aggression on the United States. You have a lot of jobs in the service that don't consist of any killing at all behind a desk. I'm talking in regards to a lot of your objectors now.
Oh, that's right. The majority of people put in the Army or the Navy never see combat, but once you're in the Army or the Navy, you're in no position to choose. You got to go where they send you.
Well, this is what I'm saying, though, but I would assume that these fellows today, like you've got 16 and 17-year-olds, aren't even in draft age, and they're thinking, in my opinion, this is my opinion only, they're already trying to think how to beat the draft. How can I get out of it? Do I have any physical disabilities? Do I have any excuses I can use? If nobody was over there and everybody took the attitude that a lot of these fellows are doing today, what position would we be in maybe 5 years from now or 10 years from now?
Well, I think that it all depends on what basis they're wondering how they can get out. I think that if they object to the war on moral and legal principles, wondering whether to get out on a conscientious, keep out on a conscientious objector status, or bring to the draft board's attention their physical infirmity. That's one thing which I think I happen to feel is all right, whereas if it isn't on the basis of principle, but they just want to save their skins. They don't disapprove of the war. They just don't want to go. This is something different again.
Well, this is what I'm saying. A lot of these fellows don't, in regards to what you're talking about, that the war is, there was no aggression on us, that it was just a power grab we were looking for. I agree with you there, but I'm saying that these people that are fighting the draft, half of them don't even realize what they're fighting about. It's just that they don't want to go, period, because they don't want to be under any discipline. They don't feel as though they want to go away for a certain amount of time. And
I think you're talking about different types than the ones I know. I know a lot of them who are in, who have been in jail or are in jail or are in the process of being sent to jail. And these are highly conscientious, high-principled people, and they're entirely different from those who just don't want to go anywhere. They just rather stay here, but they don't object to this.
Well, this is why, this
Mr. Bagnano, I want to thank you for calling, sir.
Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you. This is Night Call in New York, and tonight our guest is Dr. Benjamin Spock, and our conversation, Spock on the Spock Generation. We return to our guest following station identification. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest Dr. Benjamin Spock after station identification. Tomorrow night on Night Call, Del Shields with his guest, Deputy Commissioner, Department of Social Service, New York City, Albert Moncure. Who should pay for medical care? As one doctor has said, we have known for a long time about the relationship between poverty and health without fully facing up to them. The poor are more likely to be sick, the sick are more likely to be poor. Without intervention, the poor get sicker and the sick get poorer. But when is financial intervention called for in the individual case? Are Medicaid and Medicare the answer? Should more free clinics be sponsored by the government? Will there be a day soon when the government will sponsor all medical services? These are questions for tomorrow night's guest, Deputy Commissioner, Department of Social Services, New York City, Albert Moncure. Who should pay for medical care with Del Shields on Night Call? Ask your own questions direct. Speak for yourself, collect, from anywhere in North America to guest Dr. Benjamin Spock about the younger generation. Call Night Call Collect from the East and Midwest on area code 212-749-3311. From the West on area code 212-749-4300. And from the New York area on 866-5010. Again, Del Shields.
Dr. Spock, there are a number of questions that we would like to address to you, but we're trying to hold our questions back because the lines are just burning up tonight, which we're very happy about, and we don't want to take any time away from many of the listeners who would like to have the opportunity to talk to you. But there's one question I would like to present to you at this point. Do you feel that some of the youth view the somewhat liberal and permissive way of raising children as an attitude of the parents of not caring what they do and not caring about them at all?
I think there's two kinds of permissiveness in this sense. I think that there are parents who very definitely believe that their children should be allowed to take on more and more responsibility, and that the parents relinquish this so that the children can take it on. And I think that those are parents whose love goes very deep, but it happens to take this philosophical direction of wanting to give the children as much freedom as they think they're entitled to. I think, on the other hand, there are parents who, let's say, lavish possessions on their children, giving them, well, I think of a very exaggerated example, the parents who give their kid a sports car on graduation from high school. And in some of those cases, what you find out in the child guidance clinic, if that guy gets into trouble who has the sports car, you'll find out that the underneath the surface, the parents really don't have too much love for this child, and that they're giving him too many possessions, in a sense, because they don't love him enough, and they don't know that this is true. But it's guiltiness that makes them lavish too much stuff on their child. Now, I think a child who's being given lavish possessions instead of love. He senses this underneath. He scorns what his parents give him, and he knows that they don't love him. And he's not being... Being a person who's not loved, he's likely to go out and get into all kinds of trouble. So I think what I'm answering is, in regard to your question, I think in some cases, yes, children can be handled permissively and they know there's deep love in it. And other times they're handled too permissively and they know underneath it there's too little love, and this is why they're being overindulged.
Now, Dr. Spock, I'm going to ask for your response to another question, and I'm going to quote from an article, I think it's in from Esquire magazine, written by Robert Albrook, and it's called One Thing Sure, Parenthood Today is No Bore. And
I don't think parenthood ever was a bore.
Mr. Albrook, he quotes a letter that was written by a father who had learned that his son at college had participated in a demonstration against the war in Vietnam. And the son had carried a sign that said, and we quote, "The U.S., a nation of murderers," unquote. And the father is supposed to have written the following letter. We're just going to take a quick quote from it. The father wrote, "Put down that idiot sign and head for the library. Have you no idea at all what the U.S. has been trying to achieve in the past 20 years? Don't you know that the commitment in Vietnam was basically an extension of peacekeeping policies that have brought a very large measure of security and stability to the post-war world? Perhaps we have overshot our capabilities. I won't argue that. We've not suffered from a lack of principle. You anti-war idealists have more in common than you realize, son, with the generation that has supported collective security against aggression. And we've all got to come back to this some way, for it's still the necessary first step toward world law and justice." And Mr. Albrecht's comment was that what this father wanted for his son was not... a surrender to parental values, which any wise parent knows may be imperfect or irrelevant to changed conditions. It was rather, as Mr. Albrecht says, that he wanted his son not to lose the sense of continuity with the past. And in reading this, I was wondering if not most American parents fit into this category.
Well, you know, I'm sure my answer, my own slant on this would be that I'm sure that parent was conscientious in being a little shocked by his son's brash language, and the father prefers to believe that the United States has been generally following wise policies and is still doing so in Vietnam, though it's misfired a little. In this particular case, I agree entirely with the son. I think that when your country, it's good as a citizen when your country is doing wise, generous things to recognize that. But then I think when you country gets off the track and just goes power grabbing, I think it's good not to have the wool pulled over your own eyes by your government, or not to pull your own wool over your own eyes and say that this is noble, because this is exactly what Lyndon Johnson and the majority of Congress and a majority have been saying for the last, especially since Johnson escalated the war in 65, that we're defending the country against aggression from the North, and that this is noble America. Well, I think all you have to do is go and read a few pamphlets or a history book or two, and you find it isn't true at all. And I think that a democracy can't last unless the people find out some things for themselves. And I think those who did go and read a little history were absolutely horrified to find that our government, though I'm sure Lyndon Johnson and the others believe they're right, the facts show they aren't right at all. They're kidding themselves unmercifully, and they're kidding the American people. Now, I think, of course, that son's language, it's a country of murderers, probably horrifies the father, too, because he knows that he and his friends are not murderers, that they're well-meaning people. This is part of the impetuousness of young people. If young people didn't use extreme language and get more excited, there'd be no use of having the term youth. You know, everybody would go from childhood right into wise middle age, and it's the nature of young people to react over vigorously or sometimes over violently. But I think that it's fine. It was young people in much larger proportions than older people who had the honesty to look at the record and see that we had no business in Vietnam. And I think that's wonderful, even though they use
rude language or exaggerated language at times. I think what keeps the, what horrifies the father is the implication that he and his friends and his generation deliberately were murderers. Obviously, they aren't. But they allow our army, I would say, to kill a million Vietnamese people because they prefer to believe Lyndon Johnson than look up the history and disagree with him.
We'll take our next call from Washington, sir. Mrs. Edgecombe is hearing Night Call over WAMU. Mrs. Edgecombe?
Yes, hello.
Good evening.
Dr. Spock?
Yeah, I'm here.
How are you?
Fine, thanks.
It has seemed to me that the children raised with certain modern contemporary psychological insights, such as appear in your book, because they're less oppressed than children in previous generations and are given more freedom, tend to identify with people who are oppressed more easily than people who grow up in a very authoritarian environment.
I think psychological studies show that this is actually true, that the kids who are radicals were brought up liberally. Even among American families, the kids who turn out to be radical were brought up generally in liberal families, not in authoritarian or oppressive families.
Well, that's why I think that the young are able to say that they're interested in the poor, they're interested in the oppressed all over the world, because they are not aping an authoritarian father or mother,
yes,
but on the contrary, are able to use their freedom to feel for other people who are not free.
Yes.
That was really all I wanted to say, because the opposite kind of thing has been said so much about the kids.
Yes.
I just think that the identification with oppressed people is one of the main motivating forces of the young people today.
Yeah, and I think, since I believe that the oppression is not only cruel, but unnecessary, and has got to be relieved, I think it's marvelous that we have a generation of kids who are willing to look these things in the eye and work for them.
Right.
Again, of course, I don't want to be put in a position by saying that of subscribing to every act. I think that they can do foolish things just like older people do, but I think that their impulses, the impulses of these kids who are dissatisfied, is good.
All right. Good.
Thank you for calling, ma'am. Thank you. Dr. Spock, we want to thank you so very much for being our guest tonight.
Is our hour up already?
Just about 30 seconds, and I'm afraid to ask you a final question because you might run over.
Yeah, I might well.
But would you have 30 seconds of instant advice for millions of frustrated parents across America?
Well, I don't think there are that number of millions. I'd say if you've loved your children, even though they're difficult during the late adolescent and youth period, that doesn't mean they're going to be difficult forever. So I would say keep your shirt on as parents during this somewhat trying period.
Dr. Spock, thank you so much for being our guest tonight on Night Call.
Thank you.
This is Del Shields in New York. Good night and peace.
Night Call, the first and only nationwide listener call-in show on vital issues. Tomorrow night, same time, same station, Who Should Pay for Medical Care? With Deputy Commissioner of Social Services in New York City, Albert Moncure. Listen tomorrow night. Discuss freely and responsibly your own personal opinions. Speak for yourself on Night Call. Produced by the United Methodist Church, presented with National Council of Churches, National Catholic Office for Radio and Television, American Jewish Committee, and Urban Coalition.